I'm going to ask you a question. This is not your classic type of shit. Don't worry about it. It's not exactly like that. And there's going to be a point in time where I'm going to have you do stuff. I'm just going to start off by asking you a couple of questions that are relatively simple. Then I'm going to give you something to read. Then I'll ask you a couple more questions, and we'll discuss a particular topic, and then we'll see where it goes. Yeah, it'll go where it goes. What's your favorite holiday? It's a simple question. Hanukkah. What? Hanukkah. Why Hanukkah? Presents. Okay. Wonderful. Hanukkah. I got presents. Okay. Good. Okay. Shavuos. Why?
Sukkot.
You just like it. Sukkot. I want you to know, I've asked this question many times. This is the only year I've ever gotten Sukkot. Three times I've gotten Sukkot. Why Sukkot? I don't know what that is. Sitting outside. You do that actually without a Sukkot.
Everybody has my birthday.
What? Everybody else is on spring break and you're on Sukkot. Okay. Okay. Any other holidays?
Purim.
I'm not going to record why some people like Purim. We all know that some of you maybe, and it's so great that there's sign language, because then basically, okay. Any other holidays?
Pesach.
Why Pesach?
Family.
Massive Seder. Okay, so I'm going to ask, just for the sake of, what?
Rosh Hashanah and
Shalvim. That was a little bit of an ad for those people on. I see there are no Zionists in the room. No, I know you know the holiday. It's okay, they're all very good at this, wonderful. We can do. Okay. Now, Yom Yerushalayim is beautiful here. It's very nice. I like it also. Very nice. Except I like it for a different reason. I'm off from every single school that I'm on. And I just go on a teal by myself. All by myself. And it's wonderful. I'm going to ask the following if I can. If I had to ask you, and I included secular holidays, what secular holidays would be your favorite holidays? So first I get Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving always comes up. And we all know that the reason why you like Thanksgiving is obviously the Puritans and basically people landing on from the Mayflower. And really we all know why you love it is because of the food. And everybody loves the food, possibly the food, family, and football, the three F's.
And Black Friday,
four F's, and then we're all good. Nobody really cares about why it happened. We just care that it does happen in my family. And then there are some people that say Christmas. And here's where I'd like to ask you, why do so many people like Christmas?
Because there are lights everywhere.
Because there are lights everywhere, and obviously we're blinded by the lights. It's so pretty, yeah. Everybody around Christmas is so happy, except for right after Christmas when you have to return presents and wait online. We all love the music, and we all love
the clothing.
We all love the music. We all love the music, and one of the things that a lot of people miss when they're here, obviously, is the radio stations are a little bit different, and there's not much Christmas music that goes on here, and in fact, there's not much Christmas that goes on in Yerushalayim at all. We do have, basically, if you walk towards the Old City, and you look a little bit to your left as you're walking to Shaar Yafo, in the Christian Quarter, you will see a giant tree that sticks up over the wall, and that's provided, many Christmas trees are provided by the municipality of Yerushalayim, and if you went to Bethlehem, which I probably would tell you don't do, that's not exactly the same thing, you'd see Christmas trees are up. Oftentimes on Purim, you will see Christmas, because Hasidim, somehow when they're dressing up, who don't know anything about Christmas, oftentimes dress up as not Santa, but they have, like, you know, the Christmas hats and all their kids. See, like, the 14 kids wearing Christmas hats just because they don't know what they're doing and they don't realize that they're celebrating Christmas in Purim. It has happened. I've seen many a picture in the newspaper of it. So here I'm going to ask a few questions that are personal. Just raise your hand. It's easier than you calling out. How many of you have watched, or let's say it this way. How many of you enjoyed Christmas TV specials? Okay. Glad Rabbi Goldsmith is not here. He'd like be going like this. You know, saying no. And how many of you like Christmas music on thing? When I was your age, or a little bit younger, I knew every single Christmas song. I knew them by heart. Now, all I know is a partridge in a pear tree. I sort of forgot it. I'm going to ask you a question, which I think the answer is going to be, most of you, the answer is going to be no. How many of you have ever put up a stocking at your fireplace? Do we have a fireplace in my house? Yes. Yeah, living room. Yeah, we have a fireplace. And you put up a stocking?
My father got from one of his patients a stocking that looked like it was blue and it had like mummy.
Right. Did you put it up?
Okay, no.
Okay, so I put up a stocking, not exactly a stocking, it was my sock I put up one year. I don't know why. I just felt like, why not do it? And I actually got a present, which is one of the reasons why I'm a religious Jew today, because I got a stamp collecting book. I woke up in the morning and I knew from all the Christmas specials that I've watched that I was supposed to run downstairs in the morning and check. So I ran downstairs in the morning and I got a stamp collecting book. And I figured, donuts, stamp collecting book. I'm going with the donuts. Like, this is just a loser of a present. So might as well stay and be Jewish. I'm going to ask a question which I assume nobody in this room has done. How many of you have ever watched Christmas Mass on the eve of Christmas? That's the answer. Okay, nobody really knows anything about Christianity here. This Mass is the Christmas prayer. And on the eve of Christmas, Christmas Eve, there is what do you call it? There is a giant ceremony in most churches. And I remember flipping channels on the TV. I used to be quite addicted to TV. I was flipping the channels, and it came to Mass in major cathedral in New York. And I was captivated, really, by just watching the ceremony that was going on. And one of the things is that the bishop or the cardinal, I guess it was cardinal, dresses up in full garments. And I remember as a kid watching it, my parents weren't around, I remember as a kid watching it and thinking, this is what the Kohen Gadol must look like at the base of Mikdash. He's got the big hat, and it must have been somewhat similar. How many of you love walking, those people, I don't know every city, so I'm going to use Manhattan, but it's any major city. How many of you love walking, seeing the lights, seeing the displays, and seeing the trees? Now, it's so interesting, and this is going to get, we're going to turn a little bit serious now. It's so interesting because we miss what Christmas is about for Jews. So I'll just tell you the following thing, which some of you probably do know. Christmas night is called in Jews by, let's say, Hasidim. You know what it's called? Nittelnacht. And what is Nittelnacht? They're not allowed to learn on Christmas night. And why are Hasidim not allowed? Hasidim, people that trace themselves back to Europe. Why are they not allowed to learn on Christmas Eve? So I always get basically not allowed to learn because it's Jesus and it's Yahrzeit and we don't want to look like we're, you know, learning for his Yahrzeit, and that's only because people don't know it's not his Yahrzeit, it's his birthday, it's okay, they don't want any schutz going to the neshama. Sounds very firm. That's not why. Why did Hasidim not learn on Christmas night? Why in all of Europe?
They weren't allowed because everyone would come back from Mass and be, like, incited.
Right. And we use a modern term. Basically, people came out of church, and if they saw a Jew on the street, the Jew basically killed Jesus. If they saw a Jew on the street, they'd rip him to shreds. And this was a night where basically the rabbis thought that it was much better not to learn, don't go out to shul, don't go out to your chavrusa, stay home. And many Hasidim, what do? Even today, what do? They play card games, board games. No, Chinese food is the next day. Board games, I'm talking about in Europe. So they do all that stuff, but they won't learn even today at night. L'zecher, that idea that if a Jew is found in the street. Now, why do I say it? I'm just contrasting it with the way we treat Christmas. And we treat Christmas, wow, this is so much fun. There's so much joy in the air. It's such a happy holiday. And for most Jews throughout Europe, this was a day where they were like quaking because they didn't know if there was going to be a pogrom within the next couple of days. And we forget so often about this. Now, what I want to do is as follows. I'm going to do something which is going to be a little bit difficult. Really, a little bit. We're going to do a little bit of an uncomfortable and awkward silence for a second. Here, take these. And then just, I don't know, take these and pass them around. What I'm giving you is an article from the New York Times in 1978. Now, the New York Times in 1978 was probably the widest read newspaper in the world. I don't know what the New York Times is like today, and today there's so many other papers, and there's so many stuff online. In 1978, the widest read paper in the world was the New York Times. And there's a lady named Anne Royfe. And Anne Royfe is a famous writer. She writes a tremendous amount. She happens to be Jewish. And the New York Times asks her to do a piece on Jews and Christmas. And she writes an article for the New York Times. What I would like you to do, and this is the awkward silence, is I would like you to read it. It'll take you a little bit of time. I would like you to read through the article. And after you read through the article, what I want to do is ask you a couple of questions on it, okay? So just read through it, etc. Anybody else need?
They do.
Yeah. I want you to read through the article. Do it quietly. You don't have to do it. That's the awkwardness of the silence. And then basically we'll see what we can do with the article. Thank you. Give me another 2 minutes or so just to finish it up. School. When you're done, look up. Look from your test packet. Everybody almost finished? Mm-hmm. 30 more seconds just to get most people. Okay. I think most people are done. Just continue finishing it up if you can. Again, Anne Roifeet, Jewish woman, writes the article, New York Times. Around the world, people saw this article. And I'm going to ask a few questions just to see where we go. First question, in like one or two words, I don't want you to give me an excuse for Anne Roifeet and understand. I just want to know, what do you feel about Anne Roifeet after reading this? What do you feel about her? Feel sorry for her. Okay, why?
Well, because she was given the shell of religion. She was never given the actual religion.
Okay, good. Feel sorry. Yeah.
I think she's like a little bit confused. Like she knows she's confused. She's not just like out there. Like she obviously doesn't know how to reconcile things.
You feel that she's confused? Anybody else? Nobody else has any feelings towards her? Yeah.
Along the lines of sorry, I feel bad that this is the relationship she has with her religion.
And you feel bad for her?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like this is like when people say that people came from Poland to America and like all they saw was that Judaism was a burden, and so like all she saw from her parents that Judaism's so hard and like so bad, so she just went away from it.
Okay, good. Yeah.
I'm kind of annoyed at her.
Now we're getting someplace. Yeah. Raise your hand if you're annoyed at this woman. That's why I don't get you. I always ask, how do you feel about her? And you always go for excuses. And then one person is brave enough to say, I'm going to go even better. How many of you are not annoyed? How many of you are angry at her? Are you angry? Anybody frustrated at her? Right? I want a gut feeling, and you're giving me like all this nice stuff about her. Why are you annoyed with her?
Because like she's saying all these things, but like... She knows it's wrong, but she's not acting on it. Like, she's just saying, like, it's wrong, but like, she's not acting on it.
There seems to be, like, this waffling that she does, and I know, but. Okay. Yeah, somebody else, why?
Well, it's, like, the same thing, but, like, she, like, doesn't care to, like, teach her kids what the right thing is, and, like, she's, like, kind of, like, getting somewhere, but she's not, like, passionate about doing it.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, she admitted to the fact that, like, she knows, like, a few Yiddish words, but, like, her children know nothing. Like, she admitted to the fact that, like, she has a whole past, and, like, she knows somewhat about it. Like, she doesn't care to, like, introduce her kids at all. Like, she's admitting that her kids, like, they're just following this in the world.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, her mother and her father, and they all came from, I guess, Poland, from all European tragedy. But, like, they sacrificed their life for her to have a life, a Jewish life, and she's just throwing it away. She doesn't care about anything.
I just want you to know, can I point out something that has nothing to do with this? Just a psychological insight. All it takes is one person to say that they're annoyed, and then the comments become what? Negative. There just needs one. You did a great job, by the way. I'm not saying. But there just needs one, because we're all so polite. Like, I'm never so polite, so I just say what I think, which usually is a negative. So, but it's just an interesting thing. Here I'm going to ask you another question. Do you think that this woman represents... I'm sorry for people, not for me, I'm just going to use a reference point that I'm used to. Do you think this woman represents American Jewry?
Yes.
Yeah. Not Orthodox Jewry, but like conservative. Well, no.
Maybe
percentage, yes. A lot of people don't know. So I got non-Orthodox. I got conservative or reform, maybe. Yeah.
I think like we're all just like born in our little bubbles, so we assume all Jews are like religious and everyone knows it feels the same way, but like we're really missing most of the picture of like the fact of America.
Okay, Shana.
I don't think it's just assimilated Jewry, I think it's a huge chunk of America. I mean, there are plenty of Christians and Catholics out there who don't even know what they're celebrating when they don't go to mass, they don't go to church regularly. It's for them. It's also all about the president.
Christmas has become a commercialized holiday in the United States of America. Right. I mean, just so you should know, it's become commercialized so much that you're involved in it. Meaning, if I told you that there was a religious Muslim holiday that you have to be involved in, and would you do it, you would say probably no. If I told you that there was a serious Christian holiday that you should be involved in, the answer would probably be no. But Christmas, everybody loves. Right? Even though what? Even though it's a Catholic, or a Christian holiday. I want you to know something. I just read right before this class, I always thought the statistic of intermarriage is about 54% in the United States of America. So I just read just now, right before class, 60%. 60% of American Jews marry non-Jews. That's the majority of Jews in America marry non-Jews. If I take the Orthodox population out of the mix, it's approximately 72%, which means 72% of American Jews marry non-Jews. Now, the statistics, based on various different polls, this is not my statistics, this is not like, you know, some firm person's, this is just based on polls that they do all the time. Less than 1% of intermarried grandchildren, grandchildren from intermarried grandparents, will choose Judaism as their religion. Does everybody do the math quickly in their head? It means in two generations, you're going to lose what? 60% of Jews in the United States of America. Out of the non-Orthodox population, you're going to lose 72% of Jews in America, non-Orthodox Jews in America, will not choose Judaism. If given a poll, will not choose Judaism. Anybody know anybody that celebrates Christmas, a Jew that celebrates Christmas? Right?
Like actually celebrates?
So, tree, gifts. I don't mean go to church. Tree, gifts. Okay. For a school like this, that's a lot of people that what? Know somebody that's like that. This is something which in 1978 she wrote, but really exists where? Right in front of our eyes. And it's a serious problem. It's not a joke problem. We're talking about the serious continuation of Judaism in the United States of America. I don't know the statistics for England. My assumption, what?
26%.
Of what? That's it, 26%. That's not so bad. That's not so bad. That's not so bad. What percentage of English Jewry is Orthodox? You don't know. Okay, that would make enough. All right. How do you think Anne Royfe got to this stage? I want you to look back into the piece that I gave you, and I want you to tell me, how did Anne Royfe get to the stage where she is so far gone in terms of this situation that we have? Yeah?
I think she's really educated properly.
It doesn't seem that she has a proper education. Girls, how do we know that she doesn't know so much about Judaism?
Because her mother was a teacher.
Well, what?
She only went to, like, twice a year, and then she was like a ritual.
We'll get to that. She only went to shul twice a year, and it was a ritual, etc. Okay, good. How else do you know? What proof do you have from the article itself that she's not so educated?
She
She says here that, like, the Hanukkah story always irritated me. Why such a small miracle just to make the oil last 8 days, when the proper miracle would have been to have created Romans without the need to conquer and avoid the bloody war altogether? Like, she said a couple of other times in the article, like, it was, like, silly little things that, like about, like, Jews, like, doing the wrong thing, or, like, about bloodshed or stuff like that. And she seemed, like, very focused on the wrong technicality.
She understands that what? She understands, or she thinks. She thinks that what?
Judaism is negative. Our God is divine.
She thinks that what? She thinks that, like, Romans were in the Hanukkah story, when we all know who was it? The Greeks. She doesn't know much about what? She doesn't know much about her Judaism. Okay, what else? How else does she form this Judaism? Yeah?
I think in comparison to Judaism, it's dull, it's a lot of words. Like, she even says about Christmas, like, there's a shine and excitement to it. There's, like, all these glitz and glam and everything that's, like, in your face, whereas Judaism is, like,
Her Judaism is boring. Her Judaism is boring. And her what? And everything else is so exciting. It's so beautiful, everything else. She's carried away by the beauty of what's going on. And one of my favorite lines in this, and I'll explain to you why it's one of my favorite lines in this, is in paragraph 7. So one year my mother purchased a Christmas tree. She could not resist the bright bulbs, the artificial snow base, the wax Santa Claus candles anymore. It was in our house a secular American holiday about presents, that's all. Still had a certain shine and excitement to it. The German maid, whose memories of Bavarian childhood ennobled her in my eyes. Who is noble in her eyes?
The maid.
Why is the maid? She's exotic. She's different. Like, Judaism is what?
Boring.
It's boring. But everything else is what?
Exciting.
What else about her Judaism? What else do we see?
Well, when she's talking about the Seder, she's talking about, like, the death and how the firstborns were killed and how the Egyptians were killed by plagues. Nothing about, like, the good part about these two times. It's always on the negative.
So Judaism is about death, and all the miracles are about death.
And about, like, the ghetto, and about, like,
okay, her view, tell me what else about her Judaism reminds her of death. She also has lights in her life. She remembers her mother lighting a candle. What candle was it, girls? It's the Yahrzeit candle. Death. The ghetto. Death. Right? Pesach, death. Hanukkah, death. It's all about death. Which are her two favorite? Which is the only holiday she was exposed to? Pesach, okay. Besides that, Shul. High holidays. High holidays are all about what? Are all about atonement, deen. Look at her Judaism. Would anybody want Judaism that's like that? Not only that, what else does she feel with her Judaism? What do you want to say, Lee? Go ahead.
No, I was going to say also that when she says we're not sealed up by disappointment or mutual hatred from our Christian neighbors in their way, so they weren't getting hatred from around them and they were being welcomed by them, so then that seemed like nice to her, because it's sometimes like when you're not in the bubble and people are nice to you, like, that's when you have the most trouble.
It's one of these major things that people who teach their kids that Judaism is all about values have an issue with. Because when they teach them, and I'm not saying Orthodox, we also teach about values. But if you ever go, many of the different denominations focus only on values and not on anything else. Tikkun Olam, the Reform Movement, Tikkun Olam. Right? What happens is they go to college, and what do they meet? They meet a non-Jewish girl or guy who has what? Same values. Beautiful values. And what do? They fall in love. They just fall in love. Because, and it's okay, because what? At least they share the same values and they feel invited in. What else about her Judaism? There's one other element that is a major component of her Judaism. Yeah?
So she said that it's hard to be a feminist and a, like, proud Jewish traditional person, because she also explained, like, with her kids that she wants them to be humanist and feminist as opposed to being Jewish.
So this is a very interesting thing. And this, I've done it in a couple schools I haven't brought up, but this is something that's affecting us in the Orthodox movement. Yeah. And what's affecting us? What's affecting us is our approach to women. And why? Because she's a feminist. Why is she a feminist? It's 1978. She's been around in the 50s and 60s. She's ripe for it. She's a writer. She's ripe for feminism. And Judaism, what? At least Orthodox Judaism doesn't look like it's so what? I don't know if you've gone through Orthodox Judaism. It doesn't look so feministic. And if I want to express that aspect of myself, it looks like Orthodox Judaism does what? Squashes that. Now, I'm just going to tell you straight out. In modern Orthodoxy today, there are two battles that we're going to have that are going to split modern Orthodoxy. Now, I don't know if what I'm saying is right. I don't think I'm a smart person or a far-seeing person. This is my opinion. I could be dead wrong. I haven't done the analysis. I'm not great enough or involved enough to see so much. But if you ask my humble opinion, the two issues that are going to split modern Orthodoxy are going to be relationship to homosexuality. That's a major discussion that's going on in the modern Orthodox movement. How much we bring homosexuals into our shuls, how do we treat them, how does everything work? That's going to cause a split. And the second thing is our approach to women. That's already happening today. Do I ordain women? Do I not ordain women? Right? How far is women's learning going to go? What do I call that? What about my partnership minyanim? All these things are what? These are all Orthodox within the Orthodox movement that's happening today. So somebody who wants to express themselves in their feminism at this point in time, 1978, is not going to go where with Judaism. Okay, there's one other element that I think is important here.
The ability to choose.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah.
I think there's some like archaic association she has with it. Like she kept saying like tribal, and she says like we're trying to be civilized. It's something that she sees about Judaism and like our God is very like bloodthirsty and very like archaic and tribal.
100%. We'll get back to that in a second. Also, yeah.
I think it's at the beginning she said like when her rabbi was passing by she was embarrassed.
And what's that big Jewish thing that we all have? Starts with a G, ends with a T. Guilt. She is what? She associates Judaism with guilt. She's taken off the Christmas tree, and who happens to be there? And I said this in many of the schools, I was that rabbi. Because when I was a disciplinarian in a school, there was this one group of kids. Every time they were doing something wrong, I was standing behind them. It never failed. And they asked me, Rabbi, how do you know when we're going to be doing something wrong? So I told them I had cameras all over the school, and I watched them in my office, and I saw. That wasn't the real answer. They were always doing something wrong. It didn't matter when I stood behind them. It just nailed them. So the reality is, right, I'm the guy that you say something, and I just happen to be standing behind. Like, oh, hi, and yeah. Like you're out with somebody special, I don't know. Then there was a girl I teach out with somebody the other day, and I was thinking, do I go across the street and just make a scene? And I had too much self-control, and I didn't, but I so wanted to go over there and just say, hey, how's it going? But I did not. One day, I'll lose my self-control and have some fun. Anyway, I'm just warning all of you. I teach in a lot of schools. I travel a lot where you go. Just beware. Not that that problem exists here. Okay, anyway, so here goes. There's a tremendous amount of guilt associated with her Judaism. Now, she also, girls, is to some degree what? She also, they're going to Rav Yama, it's okay. It's not that they got insulted by the last comment. She also, by the way, associates everything outside of her Judaism as what? Everything outside of her Judaism is better. All the values she gets from where? The Night Before Christmas, Rudolph the Stone, Chris Claus. Good triumphing over evil. The victory of the kind over the weak. The kind, how did she say it? The kind and the weak. Hanukkah is this horrible story. It's not the triumph of good over evil, or what? The weak over the strong. I can't imagine anybody ever thinking Hanukkah was about the, you know, Ma'atim over the Rabbi. Oh wait, maybe we do say that. But she doesn't see it in her own. She can only see it where? She can only see it elsewhere. I'm going to tell you a story now. It's a famous story. Don't know if it's true. Don't know anything. Don't know. Supposedly, Dr. Twersky, who dresses a little bit on the Hasidic side, was traveling on a train, a subway, whatever he was traveling on, looking a little bit on the Hasidic side. And a guy got onto the train, obviously not from, you wouldn't distinguish him as a Jew, but came over to him and started saying something along the lines, why do you always have to look different? Why do you always have to make us look different? So obviously, what is he? He's Jewish. Why do you always have to make us stand out? He's ripping into Rabbi Twersky, Dr. Twersky, and he looks at him and he says, I'm sorry, I'm not Jewish, I'm Amish. And the guy said, I'm so sorry. You have such beautiful traditions. You have so many. And then, depending on who tells the story, Dr. Twersky got off the train, and one story says he cursed him out, one story says he said something not nice in Yiddish, one story says, well, you're saying, you know, whatever. And so often, what do we see? All the values and everything outside of us. So before I go on to the next part of it, I'm just going to point out one other thing that she says, and then I'm gonna ask you a question. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So here, she says the following thing. In paragraph 11, the Amish are absolutely right in their conviction that education in the broader society would undermine their cohesion, destroy their community. What is she saying? The Amish are right that what do we have to do? If we want to stay who we are, what do we have to do? We can't be out in general society. We have to what? I understand. In the Amish, it what?
It worked.
Are you frustrated with her?
Yes.
Okay. So here goes, I'm going to ask the following question. Oh, I don't got much time. I'm going to ask the following question. Ready? If you had a chance to talk to Anne Royfe, what would you tell her? Just, can you do me a favor? Just, it's being taken, keep it clean. What would you tell her? Yeah?
I would tell her that she can't really judge Judaism because unfortunately she didn't get to experience it to the extent that it should be experienced, and she doesn't really understand what it is in the full picture.
Great. What would you tell her?
I'd probably just, like, not like suggest, but, like, I think that I would say...
I thought she was about to say slap! Did you think that? You know that!
I'd say I'd say you have no right to have these, like, outward statements. Like, you can think whatever you want, but, like, to be out there, like, proclaiming that, like, Judaism is all about, like, blood and murder and, like, our traditions...
You don't have a right.
...killing people. Like, you don't have a right to say that until you actually learn it.
Okay.
And, like, if you learned about Judaism and you appreciated it for what it was, you would see us, like, the Amish or whatever, and actually appreciate that we're not that kind of people.
Okay. Yeah.
It seems like she's, like, curious about everything else, like, in the world, like, art and, like, her own religion, so I'd probably suggest her that she'd be, like, curious of, like, her actual roots and, like,
but,
where
but,
she...
By the way, fair, I'll tell you the following thing. How many students have I taught over the course of, I don't know how many years, that have said to me, Rabbi, I really would like to learn Christianity, Islam, world religions.
No, she can do all those things, but once you know...
I understand. How many modern Orthodox students have I had that said, I want to know if it's right, so I want to learn everything else, but what don't they want to learn?
No.
It's not only her. I got years of students to tell me the same thing. Yeah?
Give her a donut. No,
give her a donut.
In all seriousness, like
that might kill her.
No, because like then obviously she'd celebrate Hanukkah also. But really, I think like any rebuke is just not helpful. Like it's
just saying like, but you just don't understand, like that's annoying, like no one wants to hear that. So I think you'd honestly just have to show her, like invite her to a Hanukkah party, like take her and show her the light, not just like tell her that she's wrong.
Show her
okay.
I guess like I'm just too upset to think like nicely right now, but I just pretty much tell her like, start off saying that the Hanukkah story happened with the Greeks, not the Romans.
Yeah, like,
go on telling her how like unintelligent she sounds, and that like you really just don't know what you're saying, so just don't say anything at all then.
Can I just say there are 20 other people that want to say what you want to say? They're just not saying it because they're trying to be nice. I'm telling you straight out, this is what it does, this thing. Yeah.
I just tell her that like I feel sorry to her that she's like missing the entire point of Judaism and like missing the whole beauty of it. Like she's getting the complete wrong idea of it, and like it's like she doesn't have enough of a basis of it like to really see the beauty in it. And like I feel sorry for her.
Okay, one last one, and then I want to go on to I'll take one because you haven't said anything. Yeah.
It's just like one thing about Nechama said, like the fact that like, Nechama said she doesn't sound intelligent. I think one of the big problems is that she does sound intelligent, just like it's just wrong. But also one thing that like I would do is like probably I would like I guess kind of what Laura was saying, but like invite her for a Shabbos to like show her all the things that like she missed.
Okay. Okay. By the way, this is one of the dangers. If you go to college, an individual goes to college and you have a professor, they sound intelligent automatically. Right. You see a guy in a tweed jacket with those patches on his elbows and a pipe, you just naturally think he's intelligent even though he doesn't know anything. And therefore, it is a problem. Yeah?
I would tell her that not only is she missing the whole point of Judaism in general, but she's missing the whole point of life. She has nothing. Like, nothing she does has any purpose or any meaning. And, like, everything she does is very, like, okay, like, whatever, I'm doing it because it's nice and nice, but, like, what is she doing?
By the way. What amazes me, by the way, is everybody's clapping, but everybody is so nice. By the way, you got picked to give muster tonight. 11 o'clock, you're good. So, hold on. I just for the sake of time, because I am watching my watch, because Rav Yammer is going to come down, and before he comes down, I want everybody to just, if you have to run to the bathroom, run to the bathroom. And just, so you're not doing while he's coming down. Can I do the second part?
Yeah.
So you can imagine that this article probably had a lot of responses, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So I have some of the responses. Would you like me to read?
Yeah.
Okay. So here goes. Anne Royfe's article, there were tremendous, I have more of these. I can't find them. I lost them somebody placed in my house. These were published. This is actually a copy of the published responses. This is exactly what responses look like, or used to look like in the New York Times.
Who's responding? Like religious?
Everybody was responding. You can't imagine how many people were responding. It was incredible. You'll see. Anne Royfe's article, Christmas Comes to a Jewish Home, is one of the most sorrowful collections of abysmal ignorance, self-contempt, and tooth fairy level of theology I have ever encountered. I'm glad you're getting very cathartic experience. Please, Mrs. Royfe, should mass persecution start again as you wrote, please do not consider wearing the yellow star. It's a symbol for Jews of courage and loyalty. You would demean what has become a tragic, tear-stained sacred symbol. Ow. Ow. To the home section, may I suggest, these are all different responses, may I suggest to Mrs. Royfe that when she left the Seder table, she got up too soon. She should have stayed long enough for the tradition of removing the drops of wine from a cup to symbolizing the diminishing of her joy and redemption from slavery because others were caused to suffer. She should have remained long enough to learn the universal humanist message of freedom that Passover relates. So here he's saying you got up too early, and basically you all know what he's talking about. So I'm going to do full disclosure, which I do. I'll say something personal. My whole family does this. My kids, my wife, etc. I don't do it. I don't do it because I'm very happy that the enemies of Klal Yisrael got destroyed. So I don't do that. But if you know me, you realize it's a sad story. Okay. Anne Royfe's article should have been entitled Christmas Comes to a Nothing Home. Mrs. Royfe, by her own admission, does not maintain a Jewish home, nor, she argues, would she conceive of becoming Christian. She is nothing.
What?
I'm
sorry, I completely
agree with a lot.
I can't believe the New York Times published these.
No, I don't think it's, like, mature to be getting so, like, vehemently angry.
Hold on. Like, just wait. You're gonna be upset. Hold on. You're gonna be upset in a little bit. And this one's for you. As one who has always joined in Christmas caroling in school, starting with Dear Mrs. Riddick in the first grade, and who still enjoys all the songs and the traditions, I did so enjoy Anne Roifey's article. Support. I know. That's not what you were saying. Anne Roifey's article is full of inconsistencies, contradictions, and downright ignorance of religion. Let Mrs. Roifey not think that her children are making a choice. If they have not heard of the diaspora or Masada, they have been denied access to the basic tools with which to make any decisions. She states that should mass persecution start again, she would be wearing a yellow Star of David. I would like to remind her that her children will also be wearing the star and ask, will they even know why? I should think that she owes her children that much. Anne Roifey's article is an excellent argument for giving my children a Jewish education. She's a perfect example of mindless secularism I hope to avoid. Okay, so those are some of the responses, and that's wonderful. Can I do part number three?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, she still has morals. Like, she's not a bad person. She said that she incorporates good. Okay, but like, it's not like she's like a nothing. Like, it's not nice to say that.
Once you are, you have to. So hold on to your seat.
In religion.
Hold on to your seat. Yeah. Hold on to your seat. It's about to get worse. Yeah?
I agree with you 100%. Like, everyone who's saying she's a nothingness, she says herself, like, the reason why Christianity, she finds it great and whatever, is because of the point of being Jewish is to be holy. She can find that in Christianity also. Not that she has no meaning. She finds meaning through other means. That's why she doesn't think it's necessary to be Jewish.
Right, okay.
So she's not nothing. She does have meaning.
She doesn't say that it has any religion when she's talking about Christmas. She's saying that it's just like the lights and that. She doesn't fall through with a religion behind it.
But hold on, it's going to get worse in a second. So just.
Person. Say she's not any religion because she doesn't consider herself one either.
Hold off. Yeah.
I feel like it's a little bit problematic, but she has like a bad taste of Judaism already, and then to have all these Jews like come and like this, it seems like it's going to make people make it worse.
Hold off. Yeah.
Wait, about the emptiness thing, like that people were saying nothingness, she literally says it herself. Like, she says, if all the Christmas offers my family is a commercial glass of quick thrill and new possessions, then my grandfather's instinct to avoid contact was correct, and the future seems even narrower than the past as we lose tribal connections and replace them with emptiness. She's literally calling herself empty. Like, she knows it.
Okay.
I think you just don't write, like, an article on something that you're ignorant on. Like, my sister was actually she was interning at a campaign, and someone asked her, like, what's Judaism about? And this, like, guy who grew up not religious, like, he's Jewish, but he's not religious, he, like, was, like, just, like, interceded, I guess, and he was like, oh, it's basically, like, a really sexist religion that, like, hates women and whatever, and she
that's
was,
what
like,
we're about,
so
by the way.
Like,
we sit around the room, and we just go... Everybody basically talks about why they hate women.
She was just
women.
So taken aback. You don't comment on something that
so
you don't know.
Rabbi David Aaron just said a very interesting story. He was once someplace, and it was there for Shabbos, and somebody said, oh, I know about Shabbos. That's the holiday where you just don't rip toilet paper. So Rabbi David Aaron said to the guy, I'm not quoting it exactly, he said to the guy basically, you're right. What we do is on Friday night we get around, we put a piece of toilet, we put a roll of toilet paper, we sit around and then we just look at it and don't rip it.
Like, respect her and like she has her thing, that's fine. Like, she's allowed to have her opinion, but like, don't express it this way. Like, she's literally ruining her kid's life and her whole future because
Hold up, just for the sake of time, can I do part three?
Yeah.
All right, that was 1978 New York Times. 1988, 10 years later, in a magazine called Tikkun, which is basically associated with the conservative movement, Anne Roifey writes an article. And the article is called... The article is called Taking Down the Christmas Tree.
Oh.
And Anne Roifey, it's like all of a sudden like you get the sigh of relief. So Anne Roifey is Chozeret B'tshuva to some degree. And I want to read a little bit.
What year?
1988, 10 years later. She writes the following. In December 1978, the New York Times asked me to write a small piece on the Christmas theme from home section of the paper. I dashed off an essay on being Jewish and having a Christmas tree. The Times published it on Thursday before the holiday. I had thought that this is a small, unimportant piece, a kind of family musing that would melt in the mind of the reader like a snowflake on the tongue. I have made misjudgments in my life, but none so consequential for me as this one. And what she describes is the phone rang at the New York Times. It seemed as if all officers of all major Jewish organizations were complaining to their personal friends at the Times about my piece. Housewives, rabbis, lawyers, doctors, businessmen, all but Indian chiefs, phoned or wrote in, furious that the paper had published an article that advocated assimilation, displayed ignorance of Judaism, and seemed to express contempt for the Jewish way of life. Meaning, this piece wasn't about her. The reason why people were upset is because it was about Judaism. And I told you, the New York Times is the most widely read paper in the world. And everybody, what she did is take her dirty laundry and she just put it out there. And that's why it caused. What I'm about to say is going to frustrate some of you. I apologize. At our house, the phone calls began on Thursday at noon and lasted for weeks. I hope your kids get leukemia. No fewer than 3 irate callers announced. You deserve to die, several every breathing soul. This was something that what? Just set people off. She says the following. The intense response to the piece made me realize that I had inadvertently offended many people. Rabbis were using the piece as a subject of their sermons, treating me as if I was a female Yasser Arafat.
What?
Yasser Arafat is the head of PLO.
Yeah.
Died.
Yeah.
Biggest terrorist in the world. Okay, good. Here goes. What happened? There were so many negative calls, but there were so many calls that said, you must not understand that much about Judaism. If you would like to learn, please give me a call. And what Anne Roifey did is, she took them up on that offer, the nice people, the people that responded well. She took them up on the offer, and she said, I began to study Talmud, read Jewish history. I read about Jewish mystics. I talked to every rabbi who would speak with me. I learned about the richness of Jewish tradition, the arguments between Shammai and Hillel, the centuries of worrying about kindness and the law. After several years, I began to know the Jewish story, which was my story after all. Finally, my real story. I realized that although I indeed knew the words to Good King Wenceslas, I now knew the Kaddish and the meaning of the shofar, the names Rabbi Kiva and Reb Nachman. I also knew that I was tied by love beyond understanding to the fate of the Jewish people. I began to understand the meanings behind the rituals, and I found that I was amazed and proud of what it meant to be Jewish, of the way Jews have approached intellectual issues, on the ways we survived, on the ways our rituals blend into the seasons and bind us together in a past that finds its purpose in the future.
Beautiful.
10 years. And then at the end of the article, hold on, at the end of the article she writes, I now see Hanukkah, I'm just looking at the clock, because I now see Hanukkah not as a celebration of the miracle of oil. I see Hanukkah as a time when, as we light the candles, we pause in awe before the Jewish people whose survival through adversity brings light into the darkness of the human soul. This view makes me Jewish in a different way than the way in which I was Jewish before. It makes me part of the continuity while allowing me still to be myself, a modern American Jew filled with all the doubts and dark thoughts that are common to my times. Christmas is not the innocent matter that I once thought. Now, why do I do this article besides it talks about Christmas? This is the third or fourth school. There's one school that asked me to speak every single year. I don't teach in the school. They asked me to come speak about Christmas. I'm like the Christmas rabbi there. Every year I come to speak about Christmas there, which is quite interesting, because if I had to pick which character of Christmas I would be, it would definitely be the
Grinch.
So why do I bring this in? Not only to speak about, I don't only do it to speak about Christmas, but I do it because the article says something so important, a very important message. And the message is that if we want our Judaism to be something which we're going to stick with for the rest of our life, if we want our Judaism to be something that our kids are going to attach to, our Judaism has to have meaning and depth. It has to have meaning and depth. If it doesn't have meaning and depth, if we don't get what it's all about, so then what happens? Along the line, it's just not going to be able to compete with whatever out there in the world. I see it in you guys. There's just so much that we can do competing. I can't compete against Instagram. I can't compete against Snapchat. I can't compete against Netflix. It's just getting so darn hard because what's going on in society around you is getting so out there, it's hard to compete. The only way I can compete, my books, I want you to know, I have a colleague from years ago that always was trying to say we have to get everything computerized, like all Torah. We have to teach Gemara through computers and everything on computer. Why? Because there's charts and there's this and that. And I always said, no. If you're a good teacher, you use the book, and the book is good. And today I want to tell him, you know something? I still think I'm right. Why? Because there's nothing you could do with all your charts and Gemara that's going to be able to compete. The only thing that compete is meaning and depth. Because that out there in secular culture, I'm not saying the good secular culture, but the garbage culture that a lot of us get involved in, it just can't compete. We have depth, and I'm not saying about the good parts of secular culture, but we have depth and meaning. And we have to make our Judaism deeper and more meaningful all the time. And once we do that, then we have a second mission. And that mission is as follows. We have to go out there. We have to be the one that says, what? If you want to learn, let me know. Because who's going to be left, girls? Who's left that's going to do that? My 18% of non-Orthodox Jews that are non-intermarrying, my 40% of American, who's left? Who's going to be able to show the world the depth and meaning of Judaism? I have a community that doesn't really want to be anything with the world. They're going to be strong Jews. They're just going to do what? They're going to do it a different way. How are they going to do it? They're going to be in the ghetto. They're going to put up the walls, and they're not going to let anything in. And that's great. I'm not saying anything bad about it. It's a method. Go ahead. But if I had to pick a group that are going to be where? In and out, in both areas. It's going to be what? It's going to be you. It's going to be the Midmo girls. It's going to be the girls I teach. That's who it's going to be. So first you have to have depth and meaning for yourself. You can't get caught up in the lights. You can't get caught up in the Christmas specials. You can't get caught up in the jingle bells. You can't get caught up in it. And so often you are. I'm not only saying that stuff, but other stuff as well. Find the depth and meaning in your Judaism and make sure you spend your time. And then make sure, you don't have to be a teacher, a doctor, lawyer, Indian chief, it doesn't matter what you are. But then make sure that you're available to show the other percent that what? The depth and meaning. Not in a arrogant way, like I know the truth. Arrogance what? Doesn't work. It doesn't work. It just turns people off. I hear a lot of from Sem girls and yeshiva guys talk. They don't realize how they talk arrogantly about, you know, we learn this and they don't learn it. And nobody knows what they're talking about. Like I do, because I teach in like 15 different places. I see what people learn. Arrogance doesn't work. Openness, kindness, the willingness to share, that works. And I'm just going to say right now, Klal Yisrael needs you to do it. because we're bleeding really badly. And somebody's got to step in there and save it. And one rabbi is not going to do it, and two rabbis, and 15 rabbis. But 60, and another 70, and another 40, and another... will make a big impact. So I learned a lot of things from Anne Royfe. I really appreciate that she wrote the first article. I really do. It gave me a good insight into Judaism in America. And it helped me think. And I definitely appreciate the last article that she wrote. Not the last that she wrote, but the last one that I had that she wrote. Because it gives me an insight into what Judaism should be and how Judaism should be presented to other people. So you have a lot. I was about to say a long time left, but that would not fit with my personality. You have about 12 days left. 12 days of Christmas. Anyway, you have about to, sorry, I had to do that. You have about 12, you know, whatever amount of days yet. Make sure that you spend some of your time not only getting the details of the law, but what? The meaning of what you're doing. Like why you're doing, what you're doing, the depth of what you're doing. Okay, that's basically what I have to say to you tonight. Can I suggest that anybody that wants to get up and take a break, do what?
Now.
Do it now.